Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. WUWM's Project Milwaukee series cast a necessary spotlight on the high rate of African-American male incarceration and the impact it has on the Milwaukee community. While men make up the largest numbers in the prison equation, women end up behind bars as well, and their imprisonment and rehabilitation has a ripple effect also felt in the greater community. A leader in the study of women in the criminal justice system says gender matters when it comes to addressing women, recidivism, and rehabilitation. Dr. Marilyn Van Dieten is an academic who has spent her entire professional career working in issues involving the criminal justice system and, most recently, women in the system. Van Dieten was in Milwaukee earlier this month to mark the 40th anniversary of the Benedict Center, which provides community-based alternatives to prison for women. She tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North that until very recently, there was very little research regarding women and incarceration.
What that means is that we had no way of actually defending what to do with women, because where research funding goes to and where program funding go to are the folks that have the actual research outcomes to support what they're doing. So let me give you an example. We finally have a sense of women in corrections from the 80s to 90s. We know a little bit about their lives because researchers have gone in and talked to them and tell us a little bit about what you're experiencing. But in the 90s, what happened was women, again, small part of the population, criminal justice population. And in the 90s, what happened was we had a group of researchers who put together all of the available research, summarized it really nicely and tightly. And they say, you know, we can actually change outcomes with this population if we do certain things. The dilemma was women weren't included in those studies. They were really not part of the subject matter. Women were such a small percentage of the population that the guiding principles and the frameworks that were designed for rehabilitation were all based on male samples.
And was there a sense that those procedures weren't working for women, or that there could have been better procedures for women?
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because they were working with women to a certain extent. What was really interesting in the years that those principles were being formulated, we had groups, we'd go out and talk about these rehabilitative principles based, again, on male research. And we talked to folks about it, and inevitably they would come up to us after and say, this is great. This is really helpful. We have a framework for our work. But our women look just a bit different. Our women have other issues. So in the models for men, we saw a series of factors that kept emerging. But with women, some similarities and some differences. And the big ones were poverty and trauma and having safe housing and mental health and substance abuse or using substances to self-medicate. So we kept hearing the same theme over and over again from these groups like the Benedict Center saying, you know, we love this evidence-based practice information you're providing us. We like these structures and these frameworks, but again, not feeling it's really truly meeting the needs that our women are presenting with. And so that's really where, you know, our concern came in as researchers. Now, what happened was, as a researcher, folks would say, well, you don't have any research on women. This stuff's working. We're getting some outcomes with them. So how can you say that we should be doing something different?
Yeah, you have no proof.
Yeah, no proof at all. I mean, we had, again, qualitative data, interviews with women themselves. We had feedback and testimonials from groups. But we really didn't have the hard data. We didn't have the quantitative research. In the last 10 years, we've started to capture that. So what's very exciting now is that we can actually prove to folks that when we include items that reflect women's needs, we're better at predicting outcomes. We're better at not only predicting outcomes, we're better at providing services, targeting the needs of women. And we now have programs that were designed from the ground up for women that target the things that women want to do when they come into corrections. And we're getting really nice, solid outcomes. So we're excited about that.
Go back a little bit to what you were talking about, some of the things that affect women coming into prisons, poverty and substance abuse and that sort of thing. Don't those affect men as well? Or
Absolutely.
Are they affecting them just differently?
Well, what we're finding is, and that's a really good point, because again, there's a tremendous amount of similarity between the two groups. What we were looking for is that the programs were all being designed based, again, on male samples. And the dilemma for that is that even everything from program content to the assessments that were being done omitted things like, for example, parenting, or asking, why did you start using substances, you know, for women who are self-medicating. And oftentimes what we discovered very quickly is that the pathways for women were quite a bit different. So women coming into the system later, but their problems emerging very early on. So a lot of women reported to us that they experienced trauma and abuse in the family of origin. So a lot of interpersonal and family violence. They had witnessed and experienced those types of things early on. And again, not that men didn't, women reporting this to us and then using drugs to deal with those issues, oftentimes leaving their homes, vacating their family homes for safety reasons to get away from it, and then ending up on the street. So the pathways for women, very, very different than men, or at least the populations that we'd studied of males coming in. So we were missing the mark. We had some of the similarities, yes, substance abuse. And as I said, for men, there's some things that are really important for them too, and there's overlap. But when it came to women, you know, and their needs as they're you know, leaving our programs or leaving facilities, they want to talk about their children. So just picture, I'll give you one sort of classic example. Women come out into the community, and we have probation and parole systems that were designed primarily for males. Started my career, we didn't even ask the women, do you have children? Like, can you imagine not asking that question to women who are returning to their home, who are responsible for their child, for those children, for their welfare and for their care? And then we're requiring them to come report to us, enter into programs. And we really don't, we haven't even really addressed some of the obstacles to them even appearing for probation and parole. And what we have are women not doing new crimes, but they're not doing well under supervision. So that's one example. There are dozens. I mean, there's literally hundreds of others. Another big one was we didn't know about the impact of trauma within male samples. And some of that is males tend to underreport that. Some of it is, you know, related to the type of research we were doing in that day. But for women, we know that trauma has a longer impact. It seems to have a more devastating and a longer or more chronic impact. And so leaving that out of the picture and not addressing what's happened in the past, which is possibly a pathway to where they are right now, just sort of leaves your entire treatment model certainly lacking.
The data that you've collected now over, you say, about 10 years you've been –
well,
really,
it's been
– maybe 20?
Yeah, it's been collected for much longer. I mean, there has been research conducted from the beginning, really qualitative research and some landmark studies as early as the 80s. However, those were primarily interviews and not really based on what we call aggregate data or quantitative data, where we take large numbers of people and we can look for patterns within the data. So we haven't had that until very recently.
And so that data is what is showing you some
of
these.
And that's data that we can give to funders. That's data where we can demonstrate. But now what funders want to see is, are your programs making a difference? Are you targeting the right thing? Can you demonstrate that? And are the things that you're designing for women, are they working?
And are they?
Yes. Yes.
So,
you know, it's interesting. That's, you know, back to your question earlier, like, I think what's really fascinating about this time period is that, you know, the targets that people say, well, what does that have to do with justice system? It's certainly not in the male data, like parenting, like trauma. We have outcome data now showing that when women receive parenting groups, it impacts how they do in the justice system and how they do when they're relieved from the justice system or leave the justice system. We have nice data emerging on trauma right now showing that if we do treat trauma, if we provide women with coping strategies, that they actually do much better. We have programs focusing on relationships, which is another really large, important target area for women. The whole notion of, you know, oftentimes women coming from disruptive family situations and, you know, reengaging in unhealthy relationships throughout the lifespan. So we see a strong correlation between folks that have witnessed violence in the home, have experienced violence or sexual abuse in the home, and then those relationships, also getting into those relationships into adulthood. And so what we end up seeing is that if we give women skills even to deal with or to develop more healthy relationships, they do much better.
What about the female population in the justice system as a whole? Is it growing or is it?
Yes.
Oh, so we're dealing with more numbers too.
The numbers are larger and that probably is impacting our ability to do research. However, I think we'd rather not have that happen. Yeah, the unfortunate thing is the models that were created, these rehabilitation models, and they're good. They really are. Again, demonstrating good results across the board for males and females. unfortunately have an impact in mass incarceration. And that's a really unfortunate thing. And I think, you know, my role is to focus in and zero in on individual change, but we need to do a lot more about structural change, because the obstacles that the men and women are experiencing when they leave the justice system or as when they're under community supervision are overwhelming. When you speak to women, like, for example, the Benedict Center right now is doing a landmark project. This is an innovative program with human trafficking. So this can have a tremendous impact on women who are extremely vulnerable, who have lived, who have been victimized and tortured and, you know, abused for years at a time. Often, sometimes these women, they're at risk also for getting picked up in the justice system for various reasons. They come in through the justice system, come into jail, and then we want them to stabilize. But they can't get housing because they've committed an offense that's a felony offense. Then now we've set up a huge obstacle. So a lot of these women end up back in shelters or into unsafe housing where they're meeting folks again or, you know,
Being taken back into it.
So it's just not safe for them. So housing is a really big piece, huge obstacle for men and women coming out of the system. But it's not just housing, it's finances, it's educational opportunities. Again, all of those things that we take for granted. And there are huge obstacles for them to reenter society. So
it sounds to me like one of the things, and a lot of people have called for this, is like a complete reformation of the criminal justice system and what we consider criminal offenses, short of that large-scale change, which probably wouldn't happen overnight. What do you suggest, based on the data that you've collected and the work that you've done with individual women and the population at mm-hmm. large, what would you suggest are some of the first steps we can do to help mitigate some of this?
The largest impact we've seen is when criminal justice agencies join with community partners. And we're seeing some really nice outcomes in these wraparound models. Mental health folks did it with assertive community treatment models, and now we're actually using them in corrections, and they're powerful. But what that means, though, is that you have not just criminal justice folks there, but you at the table, you have an array of folks who you bring in labor and housing and substance abuse specialists and trauma specialists, and they all come together to work with higher risk or higher need clients. We're getting tremendous results for that because they can work together as a team to help overcome some of those obstacles. And we've seen that happen. We've seen it with, you know, housing restrictions being removed when community groups get together. So to me right now, that's a powerful piece. It also sends a message to the woman who is trying to reenter the community that, wow, I have a team of folks that are working in a collaborative way with me who have an interest in my welfare.
And hopefully aren't working at cross purposes.
Right, yeah. Right. There is a methodology to them. They're not just, it's not just as simple, we're going to get together and work as a team. They require a tremendous amount of implementation, you know, strategy and commitment from the teams that are there. But we're seeing nice results with those models. Really nice.
So groups like the Benedict Center working with criminal justice, working with other partners, that seems to be the way to go.
From what everything we've seen over the years, yes, because we can contain, we can still do these little, like, for example, we can give each individual woman access to a parenting program or a cognitive skills program. And that's great. It gives them coping strategies that they can mobilize in troubled times. But if you have a woman who has a long history of need or is facing complex mental health needs, they need something much bigger than that. You know, they need something, a program that's going to wrap around them and, you know, really help facilitate change. And it means that all of these systems have to cooperate together. And, I'll, you know, one example that we were talking about earlier today, here's an example where a woman has a strong need, has a, you know, serious addiction, a history of addictions, and is placed in jail and then comes out on the street. And if we don't have supports there for her that are going to address that need, and if she slips up in the short term and we send her right back to jail, like we keep doing that, this revolving door kind of thing. If we continue to do that, she doesn't have much of a chance.
So what is next for you in terms of research? What are you focusing on in the coming years?
One of the big things is the entire, I think, punishment model. There's a tendency in the work we do that the second someone slips when they're in the community, that we should send them right back. And that really concerns me for women and men as well. But my research is with women. And what I've heard women say is that sometimes it takes up to a year for them to actually trust the teams they're working with or the staff member they're working with, a year to stabilize with housing, to perhaps reconnect with family members, to feel confident around their children again, to feel that they can stabilize and not use. So if we continually, every single time someone makes a mistake, send them back, we're sending them way back. We're putting them through all of these disruptions, and not just their families and their relationships with their kids, but it's a huge disruption in their life again. They're going back, readjusting to inside. And I think that's an area that we'd really like to focus on.
Well, Dr. Marilyn Van Deaton, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Dr. Marilyn Van Deaton is a Toronto-based clinical psychologist who specializes in criminal justice and incarceration issues, especially related to women. She was in Milwaukee earlier this month to mark the 40th anniversary of the Benedict Center. We'll take another break now and then look at how Wisconsin is doing when it comes to influenza prevention. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.